Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, June 18th, and the NBA draft is now in 3 days. Still no front office structure for the Detroit Pistons. This is your boy Matt Shook, an AP writer in Chicago covering the NBA, Pistons follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. And today we're going to be talking about the details from the Vince Ellis article in the Detroit Free Press on Sunday, Father's Day, which had some illuminating things to say about the Dwayne Casey hiring process. We'll go through the main bullet points of that one. Hats off to Vince. And we'll be talking more about the general manager search, where it's at. Doesn't even matter anymore at this point. I'll be talking about my feelings about that. And for Pistons playoff playback today, back to some more happier times and eras from 1988 and 2005. A couple of big wins that happened on this day, although that those NBA Finals series ultimately would end in defeat, both happening on this day in history. So some good times ended up being some bad times a few days later, I guess is the best way to put it. But today, starting with coaching, Dwayne Casey just passed along some interesting things about the hire from Sunday's Detroit Free Press. The press conference, by the way, scheduled for Wednesday. Dwayne Casey will meet with season ticket holders at about 2:15. So if you want to get out there to the Little Caesars Arena as well, check out your inbox for information on that one. Vince went out to Beverly Hills, California last week and met with Dwayne Casey and also talked to Tom Gores and Ed Stefanski for the story. We didn't get that kind of coverage from other competitors that Vince Ellis has with the Detroit News or The Athletic or M Live. So, again, shout out to Vince for his coverage of the coaching search, which has been top-notch. Obviously, Adrian Wojnarowski is kind of the one that breaks all the big news for the NBA, but Vince is coming back with the secondary details and some clarification on a lot of things. And this story is kind of a grand look back on what happened during the past week or so and what might be happening with Dwayne Casey going forward, getting an exclusive interview with him in California a couple of days after the hiring. That's top-notch work by the Free Press for sending him out to California as well. Good to see some journalism still going on with newspapers in the Detroit area. And I don't mean that to signal out Detroit area newspapers. I just mean newspapers in general. I love the profile piece about what the subject is wearing to start the interview. You know, you have to have some sort of scene setter if you're a writer to say, here's what's going on and here's where we're at and here's what he looks like. Casey apparently had on shorts and a short sleeve dress shirt, second only to things like what they're eating if you meet a source for a lunch interview. We've all read the magazine pieces that start with Taylor Swift pawed indifferently at her Caprese salad or something like that. So that's Vince's version of that. He didn't have any food. He went with the clothes instead. I don't mean that to poke fun at Vince. Every writer does it. It's just a kind of a funny, cliched way to start those profile pieces. Talked about being at the Montage in Beverly Hills, which is apparently a luxury hotel. I don't know. I'm not up on my luxury Beverly Hills hotels, but a nice little humble brag for Vince there to mention that he was there. I don't know if he was staying there. Probably not, but nice little piece of information too. But getting into the meat and potatoes here, and we don't have meat and potatoes since they didn't apparently have any lunch, or else he definitely would have mentioned that. But Dwayne Casey, apparently his thoughts of joining the Pistons had nothing to do with the $6.5 million that he was scheduled to get from the Raptors. That's something that Casey apparently told Vince Ellis. No clarity in the story on whether he's still getting that money paid in full or not. We know that when Mike Budenholzer left from Atlanta and then joined Milwaukee, that Atlanta got out of paying some of the money that was owed, if not all of the money that was owed to Budenholzer, but a substantial part of that money in any way. So we're still not even sure if Dwayne's getting that money on top of it, or if the Pistons' money nullifies that the Raptors owe that, or if there's some sort of formula where half of it gets taken away or something like that. It's some just contract stuff that we don't know. And like I've said before, since this is coaching salaries, it's really not that important to fans and really shouldn't be in terms of the salary cap or anything like that. So it's just something we don't know going forward. Another point, Casey won. It's just something I want to clarify that has been kind of bothering me lately is that people throw around that he has been named Coach of the Year. Well, he was named National Basketball Coaches Association Coach of the Year. The Coaches Association, for the second year, put out this award right around the time that Casey got fired from Toronto was the time that they announced the second year of this award. Mike D'Antoni of Houston and Eric Spoelstra of Miami shared the award last year that the NBA coaches voted on. So Casey won that award. But that isn't the traditional Coach of the Year award that we've thought of since 1963. That's going to be announced June 25th at the NBA Awards show. And even Vince got this part wrong in the story. Vince noted that Casey will, quote, likely will be a finalist for the Coach of the Year, end quote. Casey is already a finalist. The league announced on May 16th that Casey, Brad Stevens, and Quinn Snyder are the finalists for that award. I'm not sure why. Maybe this concept is that tough to understand, I guess because of the Coaches Association Award being a relatively new thing, kind of throwing a new wrinkle into the awards process. But anyway, to say that Casey has won the Coach of the Year Award would be not true. He's won a Coach of the Year Award, but if we're talking about the Coach of the Year Award, he's a finalist for it, and we'll be finding out in a week or so whether Casey actually wins that award. Ellis also mentions in the article that, you know, the other finalists for the job, he talked about Udoka from the Spurs, John Beilein, and Kenny Smith as others considered. And we know that Vince Ellis was kind of the only one beating the drum that that Kenny Smith was still involved late in the process. He also mentions Juwan Howard, and we know that Juwan was involved in the process, but for that to be the only other name mentioned in this article, I didn't realize that Howard was so advanced in the process that he deserves mention when only a few people are mentioned in the story like this. I guess that surprised me a little bit. Another tidbit to keep in mind for your back pocket is that Arn Tellem's son, Michael, is now an NBA agent. It was mentioned in the story as someone who represents Jacob Poeltl for the Toronto Raptors. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that Arn Tellem had a son that's still an NBA agent. So interesting to remember that if any of Michael's guys end up in Detroit in the future. Another point, Arn Tellem kind of gave some pointed comments about young players needing to play, especially pertaining to Henry Ellenson. Kind of seemed like a jab at Stan Van Gundy, and rightfully so. I think I agree with what they're talking about here. And a quote from Arn in the story. They need to get a consistent opportunity, and giving them 6 minutes or so in the first half has no bearing on wins and losses, end quote. And I'm with that. I think generally speaking, that's a fair thing to say, and I think that you should designate some of those minutes, especially in the first half, for some of those young players to develop. Although I would tamper maybe the quote down a little bit and say something like, quote unquote, little bearing has on wins and losses, as opposed to saying something like no bearing on wins and losses. And even if you do lose a game or two throughout the season, you can possibly pin back on some of those minutes given to a young, possibly undeserving player at that time. You know, it's worth it. It's worth it to develop this guy who could help you get a lot of wins in the future, or at least you have the certainty in knowing that this guy can't help or isn't valuable, and then you're not sitting here like we are now, not knowing and kind of wondering whether Ellenson, what you have with him. I mean, is Ellenson an important bench piece this year, or is he a guy who's pretty much almost out of the league? And I really have no idea, and I don't think anyone outside of the Pistons organization and possibly even inside of the Pistons organization going into year three has any idea what Henry Ellenson is. And that's a shame. That's too bad. Just another factoid that I didn't know. Dwayne's wife's name is Brenda, that she's charity oriented, and that Dwayne's two kids are age 7 and 10, a boy and a girl. So despite, you know, being 61 years old, he's still got the young kids, which, you know, something to keep in mind when you're thinking about his future and the kids being in school and moving them around down the line when they become teenagers, maybe when the contract comes close to ending in a few years. So maybe an interesting thing to throw in the back of your mind there. As far as the Dwayne's schedule last week, Blake, Reggie, and Andre met at Tom Gores' house in L.A. along with Casey on Tuesday night for a meeting. And then later in the week on Thursday, Casey met with Stanley Johnson and Luke Kennard during workouts on Thursday. So those are kind of the five guys in this team kind of going forward. You maybe throw Reggie Bullock into that mix as well. That's kind of the core of this group right now. And talking about some on-court play, Casey said there will be an emphasis on ball movement, playing fast, and attacking from the weak side. And he also said you can expect fewer post-ups. I don't mind Blake Griffin on a post-up every now and then, so I'm not as big of a detractor against the idea of post-ups when talking in the context of the Detroit Pistons. Sure, we don't want Andre Drummond getting post-ups anymore, but you know, just some things to keep in mind stylistically about Dwayne Casey and the Pistons as well. But I'm going to be talking a little bit about the GM search here in a minute. I'll tell you why this thing continues to be a farce from Ed Stefanski's end. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we've got reasonable rates. So email me at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later on, we'll have the Pistons playoff playback. Since we couldn't live in the present with the Pistons in the playoffs this spring and summer, we will relive the past a little bit. Also wanted to pass along the results from the Pistons GT game on Saturday in the NBA 2K League. The boys resumed regular season play, beating the Cavs Legion team 57-50. I'm so far ahead with 20 points and 7 rebounds. Let's get it. Ramo had 17 points in the NBA 2K video league that the Pistons and the NBA have going as an inaugural season this year in New York. The Pistons now, Pistons GT, 4-1 on the season, alone in second place in the regular season standings behind Portland, who was 5-0. Pistons GT team, the only one-loss team in the NBA 2K league out of the 17 teams in the league this year. 1 p.m. Saturday, the team will continue its regular season against Mavs Gaming, and then at 5 p.m. against Pacers Gaming. So the first regular season double dip for the boys. 12 weeks of regular season games in all, so upcoming week 6 will be representing the end of the first half of the regular season. Moving on to the real Pistons, the GM search, no news as we sit here on Monday morning. And at this point, why even bother getting a GM, right? Vince Ellis of the Free Press even mentioned on Twitter that Ed Stefanski might even name himself president of basketball operations and general manager and then hire the typical 3 assistant general managers after that. Why not? Who cares? I think that's kind of indicative of the Ed Stefanski power grab that we have going on here. Tom Gores gave him the charges of figuring out what the front office power structure looks like. And as we figured out, that pretty much means that Ed Stefanski is going to make himself the all-powerful one in the front office. And as Vince notes, if that's the case where Ed Stefanski is going to name himself president of basketball operations and general manager, then why would a guy like Trajan Langdon, the assistant general manager of the Brooklyn Nets, why would he move to Detroit to also be assistant general manager here in kind of a lateral move? My newest theory is that maybe the current GM is already in-house. What if Pat Garrity gets promoted from assistant general manager to general manager? Something to think about here in the next couple days, or maybe weeks, or maybe months. Who knows? But like I said, I think it's all just a little bit of a power grab from Ed Stefanski, and he, in his infinite wisdom, decided that he was the one who's going to get all the power. We've heard about a possible new general manager name coming in, guys like Trajan Langdon, Malik Allen, and Brent Barry still being tossed around for that possible GM or maybe assistant GM, looking for that young rising talent. But wouldn't you want that young rising talent to be involved in the coaching search process? And wouldn't you want that person to be involved in the draft process? I mean, it's still possible that they could come in and be part of draft night, and that's one thing, it's valuable, but they've already wasted the lead-up time for the draft. And what happens next year when presumably that young GM is in place and now he's going through it for the first time at that level of stature in any kind of front office? Now, the Pistons not having a first-round pick this year makes the whole draft less consequential for the organization, but it also gives like a nice chance for a dress rehearsal for that young general manager, a chance that obviously they're missing out on right now. If he had that chance, then maybe next year they feel like they could be hitting the ground running a little bit moving forward in their first, you know, second year in the position, but first year kind of in charge of a consequential draft situation for the Pistons. And I know that whoever they hire will likely have been in draft rooms and in draft processes before, but the chance to be rubbing shoulders in this particular draft room with guys like Dwayne Casey and Ed Stefanski in that setting, to know Also, what kind of workouts that the team is putting players through, or even having input on what kind of workouts that they should be putting some of those players through as they're trickling in to the practice facility over these last few weeks. You know, what kind of questions they're asking at the combine in Chicago. You know, the virtual reality thing that they did, we talked about when they were here in Chicago at the combine. That was pre the hiring of Ed Stefanski. That was before that. That was during the Jeff Bauer era. So did they just throw all the results from that away? Are those players that had to go through that just always going to be laughing about the Detroit Pistons going forward like the rest of the league seemingly probably is these days? Just frustrating times for the Detroit Pistons. But if you want to get into the draft, a great way of doing it is listen to the Locked On NBA mock draft, which is continuing this week, almost through the whole first round now. 19 and through 24, those picks going out today on a podcast. You know, who was the big name who dropped in the draft, which was an interesting one that did. It's a guy who could be a dynamic scorer. He kept falling in the Locked On NBA mock draft. I thought about getting up there and getting the Pistons to trade up and making a move for him. So you should listen to it and check out who it is. Let me know what you think about that dynamic scorer falling in the Locked On NBA mock draft. The Locked On Podcast Network, we got you covered with the local experts on the biggest stories. But up next, we'll have the Pistons playoff playback. Since we couldn't have Pistons playoffs here in the present, we're going to have to relive the past a little bit here on Locked On Pistons. Well, tomorrow, Tuesday, is an infamous day in Detroit Pistons history as we go to June 19th, 1988, 30 years ago Tuesday, one of the most memorable quarters in Detroit Pistons history, Game 6 in L.A. Pistons won Game 5 at the Silverdome, taking a 3-2 lead in the franchise's first trip to the NBA Finals. Isaiah Thomas would score 14 points in the first 8 minutes of the third quarter in a close game in L.A. in Game 6, but then turned his ankle, stepping on Michael Cooper's foot as Isaiah finished off a transition play where he passed it off to Joe Dumars for a layup. But Isaiah would only sit 35 seconds and came back into the game, scoring 9 more points that quarter for 25 in the third quarter, which still stands as a final record for an individual quarter. But the Pistons still couldn't get it done. Despite being up by 3 points with a minute to go, this game featured the phantom foul by Bill Laimbeer with 14 seconds left, giving 41-year-old Kareem Abdul-Jabbar 2 free throws, which turned out to be the winning free throws. Kareem set him up for the baseline skyhook. Laimbeer with a little bit of contact on the front shoulder, but still not a lot. Pistons fans would argue that not nearly enough to call foul in that situation. 103-102 was the final. Isaiah finished with 43 points, 8 assists, and 6 steals. That ankle injury would linger into Game 7 a few nights later as the Pistons would lose that one. We'll have more on that in a couple days. But Byron Scott ended up missing 2 free throws with 5 seconds left, which actually ended up helping the Lakers as Isaiah kind of got trapped in the backcourt on the rebound. Couldn't get the ball down the court in time, and it was game over. Finals MVP that year, James Worthy, 28 points and 9 rebounds in that game, 22 points and 19 assists for Magic Johnson, and a classic Magic Johnson game. Game 6, the Lakers survived. But back to 2005, Pistons Game 5 with the San Antonio Spurs. 13 years ago on Tuesday, June 19, 2005, you know this one, the Robert Horry game. 34 points for Chauncey Billups in the loss, 96-95 in overtime against the San Antonio Spurs on Father's Day. Robert Horry had 21 points in 32 minutes, including he had 9 points with 2:15 to go in the fourth quarter, finished overtime with 21. He had 3 points in the first 3 quarters of the game, and those 3 came with 1 second left in the third quarter. He just was unbelievable. People forget that Tim Duncan kind of choked late in this game, missed 3 of 4 free throws in the final minute of regulation, missed the putback in the final seconds of regulation that could have ended the game, and also dropped the ball in overtime for a big turnover with really not a lot of pressure on him. And another forgotten fact is that Rasheed Wallace also tried to call timeout when he rebounded Duncan's miss at the end of regulation. The Pistons didn't have any at that time, but it was determined that that was not given to him. As it was, I guess, determined by the refs that he called it after the buzzer had sounded, although he didn't. And lucky for the Pistons that they didn't get called for a technical foul there. Rasheed would later have an even worse boner later in the overtime as well. The Pistons led by 4 with 1:20 left to go in overtime. That's when Robert Horry had the dunk over Richard Hamilton, who was trying to draw the charge, drew the foul, but Horry was in pain, walked down to the other side of the court with his left shoulder draped down and ended up almost airballing the free throw after the dunk. So the Spurs were still down two. Chauncey had a couple of misses in the last minute. Rip had a miss in the last minute as well. But down two, knocked down the three with 5.8 seconds left. Robert Horry inbounds the ball from the side into the corner for Manu Ginobili, who was covered just fine by Tayshaun Prince. Rasheed Wallace, for some reason, goes and traps the inbounds pass. Ginobili easily throws a bounce pass around him to a wide-open Robert Horry. Ben Wallace stayed in the post with Tim Duncan. Lindsey Hunter, who was in the game, was on the other side of the court with Bruce Bowen. No one could get over to Robert Horry. Knocks down the three-pointer with 5.8 seconds left. The other side of the court, Larry Brown drew up a play in the timeout for Rip Hamilton. Tony Parker's draped all over him. A lot of contact between Rip Hamilton and Tony Parker, but it seemed like Rip probably gave more contact to Tony Parker. A good no call on that. Misses the shot in the lane, and that was it. 3-2 for the San Antonio Spurs going back home for games 6 and 7, and we'll have more on those games later in the week here on Locked On Pistons. Give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And give us a like on the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-MattSchuk. And thanks for listening to us. We'll have some more. We'll have some draft coverage later in the week. And getting ready for Thursday's draft, for Wednesday's Dwayne Casey introductory press conference. A lot going on here in Pistons Nation for late June. So this is your host, Matt Schuch, and thanks for joining us here on Locked On Pistons.